Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
What if the scariest story you could ever tell was the one you actually lived? Imagine waking up after brain surgery and not recognizing your own life. Now imagine turning that experience into something that helps others survive theirs. Today's episode is unlike others we've done. For over 30 years, she was a nurse, calm in crisis, guiding patients through fear, trauma, and the unknown. And then one day she became the patient. So Jenny White is back. And if you didn't catch her first episode, she went into the trauma of having a brain tumor, waking up and not remembering her own life, including her own husband. And what she did next was incredible. She took that trauma and that fear and she turned it into a raw, unfiltered experience and turned it into writing, something so incredibly powerful. So today she is a published author of medical horror. But this isn't the way you think of fiction, because when you've actually lived through it, you don't write stories the same way. And today we're diving into how pain becomes purpose and how sometimes the worst thing that ever happens to you becomes the reason that you're here. Jenny, thank you so much for being back on The Advisor. It's so good to see you.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Yeah, you have just this amazing story. I've seen your story in so many movies and sitcoms of the patient who wakes up and she doesn't remember her partner or husband, and there's always another man involved. But I know your story is not that, but that's what I think of when I think of your story. And it's incredible. Take us back to the moment when you realized that the experience has changed you forever.
Well, it didn't happen right away. I remember clearly waking up. And the first thing that I remember seeing was that I was tied to the bed. And, you know, as a nurse, you're like horrified thinking, oh my goodness, you only get tied to a bed if you're doing something really wrong. And, you know, they say that nurses make the worst patients. And so I kept the myth alive. Sure enough, I was a terrible patient. When I was coming out of my coma, apparently I became quite combative. Clearly, I didn't like what was happening to me. And because I was trying to remove medical equipment that was dangerous, I had to be restrained. So I got that. But I remember clearly waking up thinking, I'm tied to the bed. This is not good. Right. I then remembered looking around and I knew almost instantly that I was in an ICU, which I fully expected, actually, because knowing what they were going to do and how they were going to do it, I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to be going home that day. So I wasn't surprised when I woke up in the ICU. And oddly, it was familiar because I guess I'd worked in ICUs. I knew what to expect, the beeping sounds, the smells, the monitors. That was all okay for me. That was like going home in a way. But what I didn't realize was that the man at the end of the bed, I didn't recognize him. And he was in street clothes. And that was my clue. Okay, he's in street clothes. So he's not a doctor. And if he's at my bedside, he must be important. He must be a family member. And I remember going through that scenario in my nurse brain, thinking, okay, so this is somebody I should know, and I didn't know who he was. So I kind of played along, like I expected him there, but I couldn't come up with his name or that he was my husband or anything like that.
My gosh, that must have been incredibly scary for one. We're going to get into that in a later episode. I want to talk about how you rebuilt your relationship and all of that, because I think that's so fascinating to me. So what was the moment you thought to yourself, I need to do something with this? Because in the last episode, we went into how, you know, you started rebuilding your life and you took a course on writing and turned everything around. So what was the moment that you're like, oh, I'm going to use this experience and turn it into something magical?
Well, it wasn't actually until I got home when I was lying in bed recovering and I was having therapists come to do different things like speech therapy and physiotherapy and that kind of thing. You know, as I was lying in bed watching TV and watching movies to pass the time, I remember thinking, okay, I can't do this for very long in that, you know, everything seemed kind of dull and boring. It was almost like I was being tortured by being in this bed, having to watch TV and movies, even though they were good in that they triggered some memories, I do remember thinking, okay, this isn't going to work for me. I'm going to have to figure something out. And that's when I gave myself permission to dream. And I remember lying in bed thinking, okay, so I'm back to being 5 years old and I don't remember anything. So if I could do anything, if I could be anything, if I could reinvent myself somehow, what would I be? And I just sort of allowed that seed to be planted. And over, you know, several days, over weeks, it sort of started to come to me what I would like to try. So it wasn't an instantaneous thing. It was something that I kept asking questions. Well, like, what could I do? What would I really love? And it took time for that to surface. That's where the writing came in, though. And what one of my therapists suggested was, because I was having trouble verbalizing, that I start writing down words. And when I wrote down words, they made sense. They were correctly spelled. They were actual words, whereas I couldn't say them. So I started writing down my feelings about being frustrated and angry, and I was grieving the fact that I couldn't remember stuff, couldn't talk, wasn't great at walking, was exhausted all the time. And I just kind of allowed that to simmer away for a while, and I built on it every day. And as I dreamed, I finally decided, you know, I like the idea of writing. I should try writing. I mean, I used to write all kinds of academic papers when I was a nurse, but writing fiction's totally different. And I was smart enough to realize that, okay, I don't know how to write a book, but hey, you know, what could go wrong? I can find out how to do it and try. And if I, you know, if I fail, that's just feedback that I need to try something else. That's how it started.
So it started off as healing. Essentially.
It did. It helped me rewire my brain for speech, which was really helpful because the speech therapist would have me write a word and then we would find a way to make me say it so that it actually made sense. It was a really interesting process.
Wow. So you had some memories of your past, but you weren't able to remember other things. That's quite interesting to me. Can you speak more on that?
Yeah. So the memories at the beginning were just completely gone. It was like someone had emptied my brain out and there just was nothing there. I couldn't remember my name. I remember asking the nurse one night, what's my name again? And because I just couldn't come to it. It took time. And as time went on and things were triggered, then some of the memories came back. I certainly don't remember all of my nursing past, but I remember bits and pieces. And as I write, it kind of triggers me to sort of go down rabbit holes to try and figure out, okay, am I imagining this or did this actually happen to me?
Well, that's incredible. What was the first thing that you wrote after everything you went through?
Well, the very first thing I wrote was a children's book, because what I was doing was I was lying in bed processing and just kind of thinking like a five-year-old would think. And my dog was at my side. That's Molson. And, you know, I would be looking at Molson thinking, okay, what would be a great story to include Molson in? And I thought, okay, well, let's start real simple. Let's start with something like going to the zoo. And so in my brain, I tried to start thinking, okay, what zoo animals are there? And you know, I even, you know, at times would go on the computer and type in zoo, and then, you know, zoos would come up, and then I'd click on all the pictures and try and recognize and name all the animals. It was really weird. But that kind of helped me build a story. And as each story started to develop, you know, I was able to incorporate, okay, now if I was talking to Molson, what would I say to him? And dialogue came out and different things. So it was part of the healing journey for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you went on to write a book, which is going to be a series, and you're developing what's called a medical horror.
Medical thriller.
Medical thriller. Okay. So
yes,
you lived as a nurse for 30 years. So is that kind of where the premise of this series is coming from? And how does that change the way that you write?
Well, one of the things that I learned when I went online and I started looking for online courses that I could take at my own speed, and that was how I kind of worked around my good days and bad days and how I worked around my fatigue. So, you know, I'd be able to watch something for maybe only 20 minutes and it might be a 2-hour class, but I could break it down. So as a nurse, one of the things that they say to do is to write about something that you know, which was kind of ironic in my case because there weren't a lot of memories there. I knew I was a nurse, but I just couldn't remember specifics of nursing at the time that I started. So I started looking at pictures of nursing online, and those pictures and some of the words that were attached to those pictures started triggering memories. And that's how I remembered my ICU background. And I remembered how much I loved that because it was such a great environment to work in that it was a tough environment, but I loved the challenge of, you know, being on top of your game and knowing your stuff and learning new things. And so I took those elements and I put them into my character, Abby. So Abby is a nurse working in an ICU and she experiences a brain tumor, just like I did. So I kind of incorporated myself into the character, although not all of the elements in Abby's world are my world.
Wow. So what do you think readers will feel when they read your work that they wouldn't get from traditional fiction?
Well, I hope they could put themselves in Abby's shoes and experience what she's experiencing. I went into detail about how unsure she was, how she didn't have her confidence, how she doubted whether she was capable of going back to work in that environment because of her memory loss and because of some of the other challenges that she faced, like personality change. You know, she worked in an environment where her coworkers would know her well, and she was concerned that she would present differently because she had, in fact, changed. And that was sort of my reality as well.
Absolutely. What about the loneliness aspect of things? You must have experienced some loneliness at many different levels of that most people don't experience.
Well, I felt incredibly vulnerable because I was used to being a pretty high functioning person, and to have to relearn basic things like how to walk, how to brush your teeth, how to do certain things was appalling in a way, because you're thinking, oh my goodness, like how stupid am I? You know, you're kind of saying that to yourself in your head going, you should know how to do this, like get it together. And yet you have to stop and actually think like a child would think in terms of putting, you know, getting the toothbrush. Okay, what does a toothbrush look like? Getting that in your hand. Then what do I need with the toothbrush? I need toothpaste. What does it look like? And where is it? How do I, how do I actually do it? So people don't think that simple things that we learned since babyhood are ingrained in our brains. They are in our memories. But when your memory center has changed and you lose them, then you're starting from scratch.
Yeah, that's incredible. Did you ever relive parts of your experience as you were writing? Was that part of the process as well?
It was. Well, part of my reason for writing was just to have an expression, be able to sort of pour my soul out onto the paper, just as a way to try and articulate what it was like, so that others, when they have brain tumor experiences or life-threatening experiences, they can relate to some of the things that the character in the book talks about.
Right, right. And then how did you take something so terrifying and turn it into something so meaningful?
You know, I think a part of me as a nurse is very sort of black and white in that, you know, I've seen good and bad. And I know when people focus on bad, things do not go well. When people focus on hope and future and possibilities, they tend to do much better. So what I did was I refused to go down the road of, oh my goodness, like I've lost everything. What am I going to do? Instead, I started asking questions like, I've got a blank slate here. This is a new opportunity. Not many people get to rewrite their life. If I had an opportunity to do that, what would it look like?
Right. Yeah. A lot of people will go through trauma and they'll want to forget it all. But you essentially wrote about it and turned it all around. Was there a resistance? Was there a part of you that did want to just forget it all?
No. For some reason, I felt compelled to share the story because I think the nurse in me is so ingrained that I'm a helper. And by sharing stories, that's how we raise narratives about certain things. And one thing that I've always told my patients is that it's okay to be scared. It's okay to not know what's going to happen next. What I came to believe as I was slowly recovering is that, you know, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. My body kind of crashed and burned on me, but that's okay. It's like you take the car in and get it fixed. So that's what happened. So now that I'm fixed, what's next?
Yeah, absolutely. And what did the writing give you that nothing else was able to give you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I felt very accomplished as I navigated each piece of the puzzle. I mean, there is so much to learn, and I am far from done in terms of learning how to write a great book. I did my best based on what I had at the time. And, you know, every day you learn a little bit more. So I found joy in accomplishing something, even if it was only, you know, getting a paragraph written or, you know, taking a class or submitting some work for review. Every little bit helped build some self-confidence back. Now, the one thing that I did find was, you know, as I felt better and better, so I'm 2 years out from the surgery and I'm still recovering, but as I was feeling better and less exhausted, I spent more and more time writing, probably at the expense of other things like spending time with my husband. That's a whole different kettle of fish. But it gave me purpose. It gave me strength. It helped me focus. It helped me start on a path towards my dream.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. It just goes to show that we never know how the story, our life story, is going to be written. You know, we spend so much time worrying about the past and worrying about the future and worrying about how we're going to get to wherever we think we need to go. But most often than not, we have no idea where we're going to go and how we're going to get there. It just goes to show how little control we actually have on our fate.
You know, and I would disagree with that. I would say the opposite. I would say that we are sort of programmed, even from being little children, into what we should do and what success is. And a perfect example. So, you know, I said I went back to dreaming like a five-year-old. Well, a five-year-old doesn't have a lot of responsibility other than, you know, sort of showing up and doing what they're told. So when you dream of being a five-year-old, as you grow, people and society put barriers on you, right? They say, okay, now it's time to focus. You're in kindergarten now. You need to learn X, Y, and Z. And you're going to be, you're going to perform in a certain way. And your goal is to do this. And then as you grow and you become, you know, a teenager, you're told, okay, you're going to graduate from high school. You're going to figure out what you want to do. You're going to start seeking that path. You're going to find a partner. And all of those extraneous things come and put boundaries on you. And so you go down this path. Now, when you have a life-threatening event happen to you where your past doesn't matter anymore and you can focus on what you want to do, it opens all kinds of doors. Like you can dream and you can think. And, you know, if you're in a set of circumstances where you feel trapped or you feel like you can't go on or you feel like people are expecting this from me, well, test the norm, challenge it. Say, you know what, maybe there's something else I could do that would bring me joy. And that's kind of how I motivated myself to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. What I meant was that we most often don't know where life is going to take us. And so instead of worrying about how we're going to get somewhere, I think it's so important to be in the moment, you know, and you're right. We are so programmed from society, the definition of success, how we're supposed to act, especially as women. And we forget how to play. And I just think it's fascinating that you took this experience and you essentially use boredom and, you know, that lonely aspect of being so secluded to your bed, essentially, and you turn it into play, which then led into creativity, which is essentially what we all are. We're all creators of our own life. I just find that so fascinating and so incredible. So many people are lonely and bored, and they need to hear this. So hopefully they're listening right now.
One of the things we're always told is to, okay, stop dreaming, right? You're an adult now. You don't have time to dream. Well, that's where your imagination allows possibilities, right? It plants ideas in your brain that maybe are out of your comfort zone, maybe out of what you would normally expect that you would do. But that's where the joy and the adventure comes in, is trying something out of your wheelhouse into something else.
Yeah. I heard a saying this weekend, actually, if it's not fun, make it fun. Or it was something along those lines of, if you're doing something and it's not fun, well, make it fun. You know, life is supposed to be fun and exciting and playful. Just so cool. So you essentially went from nurse to patient to author. And so who would you define yourself as now?
I would say author. I think I really have embraced that idea. And I'm certainly focused on becoming a great author. So, yeah, I mean, the journey is far from over. I'm just at the beginning of the journey. And every day I learn something new that I have to apply. And that's a good thing, because not only does it challenge my brain to try a little harder, but again, it helps me meet people like yourself and make those connections and grow as a human being and give back by sharing the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like you became someone new, or did you essentially return to who you were always meant to be?
I would definitely say I'm someone new. If you ask my husband, he would say I'm someone new. Although parts of my personality are the same, some of it has definitely changed. For example, I used to love like quilting and sewing and that kind of thing. I have zero interest in that now. Some of the things that I used to do in my past, I've just, okay, been there, done that, no longer interested. Let's try over here and see what there is. I would definitely say I've been, it's almost reborn in a way.
Right. That's incredible. So for someone going through something maybe life altering right now, how would you recommend that they begin to turn this around and find purpose within the pain that they're feeling?
Yeah. And that's a tough question, but here's what I internalize myself. First of all, I think you have to really time to heal and look after yourself. Women in general tend to appease everybody else at the detriment of ourselves. And when something like this happens, you go, okay, no, me first today. I'm taking charge of this and I'm going to make sure that I'm okay. So that's one thing. Number two is reach out to people that you trust and that you can talk to that are non-judgmental. And the reason I say that is because even though I might look like I'm okay and together, inside I'm still struggling. I still have depression. I still have word-finding days. I still have comprehension days where I really can't follow a conversation. I have poor short-term memory. So quite often my husband will tell me something and I'll have to ask him again. And it might only have been 5 minutes ago. So you have to have a circle of people around you who are kind and who are willing to give you space. So that's important. And the other thing that I would really say is, don't be so hard on yourself and take baby steps. You know, you can't reinvent yourself in one day. That's just not going to happen. You might have an idea of where you'd like to go, but you're not going to accomplish it in a day. So I have managed to get a published novel on the market. That to me was one of my huge goals, and I've accomplished it, and I'm proud of myself, and I'm grateful, and I celebrate that success. And that's something that we don't do a lot of, is just celebrating the small accomplishments. You know, there are days I can't get out of bed. There are days when I just want to crawl up into a fetal position and just, you know, crash. And I give myself permission to do that for a short period of time. But then I say to myself, okay, you had that, time to get on with it, get up, have breakfast, and try something. And if you still need to go back to bed, go back to bed, but you've made a step forward. So every day is a baby step towards where you want to be.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that, because we need to give each other grace. You know, so many people, most of us, me included, I'm guilty of it. I show up and I pretend like everything is great, when inside I could be going through something. And it's so important to remember that we're all literally human beings just trying to do our best and we ultimately want to feel good. And we ultimately want to feel healthy and be loved and taken care of in our own ways. So thank you for, highlighting that and for being open and honest about that, because I would have thought that you were doing fantastic.
Well, and that's the thing is we judge people based on how they look or how they act. And you're right. Like so much of us is internalized, you know, the struggles, the fear, the anxiety, the stress, the not knowing and the feeling like you're not going to be good enough. That is so ingrained in us that we have to be kind to ourselves as well. I'll sit there and I'll dream about something magical. Wouldn't it be great if I was a wizard? And, you kind of go down that rabbit hole for a few minutes and you allow the imagination to just kind of take over. Mm-hmm. People, if you tell them that in a conversation, they're going to look at you and go, okay, she's lost it.
Yeah.
But the point is you don't have to tell them. This can happen mm-hmm. inside you within your own self. And you don't ever have to tell another human being out there. Spirit will know, whoever your support is on a bigger scale, they'll know. And it's okay to ask them, okay, I'm going to need some help with this. This is where I'd like to go. So you just have to trust that the universe is going to work with you. After all, I consider that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, right? That means there's more to us than just the frame that we're sitting in.
Yeah, I 100% believe that we are so much more than our physical bodies. And I also communicate through spirit as well. So you're speaking my language. And I do. I wish more people would talk about this stuff because it is somewhat isolating. Like it gives me peace and security knowing that I'm supported and, backed through something that I can't even imagine how great and much greater it is than myself, right? It's fascinating. But to talk about that with other people would be just the icing on the cake for sure. Do you find that your spirituality deepened with this experience, or were you always a spiritual person?
I was always a spiritual person, but definitely it has deepened through the experience. I did speak to my maker before I went into surgery and just said, I'm not done yet. So if he can help me out on this one, I would appreciate it. And, the fact that I was in a coma, which they didn't expect, and I came out of it and I'm functional today, tell that there was someone looking over my shoulder and someone, something, somehow made this happen. Because I certainly didn't.
It comes down to, in my thinking, our belief in something greater than ourselves. And so if we're, I think if we're any type of unsure, the universe can feel that. And so if we wholeheartedly believe in that superpower, because I know for myself, I'll have moments of spirituality and then I'll have days where I'm like, maybe I'm wrong and this sucks, but then something really magical will happen. We all have those days. So what were some of those moments like for you?
Well, for example, when I started thinking about writing, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to have to come up with a plan. So I asked the question, you're going to have to help me come up with a plan because my brain's a little scattered right now, but this is the outcome that I want. And I had a clear vision of what I wanted. That's when, the next day when I got up out of bed, I said to myself, okay, I should go online and I should start looking for courses that I can take that would work for me. And, as I typed in my search, things started coming up that were appropriate and helpful, and they really made a difference. So that's just one example of some things that have happened.
Wow, incredible. So what would you say to someone who feels like their life has been completely taken from them?
I think you need to understand that, number one, there's hope. And number two, you are actually in control more than you think you are. And I think those are sort of two key messages that I really want people to hear and hear deeply. Change doesn't have to be huge. For me, it was. It was a real wake-up call for me. But I could have chosen to just curl up in a ball and live out the rest of my retirement until the end, right? That's an option. I chose not to go down that road. I chose, let's try something different. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't work, well, feedback that didn't work, try something else. So I think people need to understand that they have the ability to make decisions, big and small. And the big ones are all composed of little ones, little thoughts, little ideas, little attempts, seeking out, asking questions. And just being open to possibilities.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Well said. So tell everyone about the work that you did, what you're doing now, and where people can find you. Tell us about your books.
Okay. So I've got two different sets of books and on sort of on the extreme ends of the scale. So I started with children's books and I still continue to develop them. And it's called the Moslin and Jenny Adventure Series. And it has its own website at www.molsonjennyadventures.ca. And then the medical thrillers, which is really my nursing career encompassed with my brain tumor stuff, it's at www.jennywhite.ca. And just be aware, there are a couple of other authors by the name of Jenny White. And I didn't realize that when I used my own name. But I'm the Canadian medical thriller. The others do different types of genres. So you should be able to find me.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being here today and for sharing more of your story. I know we're going to get into further details as you're going to be joining us again for another few episodes. So I look forward to those as well.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so much fun. And so this is a reminder to the audience that we often don't talk about the hardest chapters of our lives enough. And so even if it feels like it's the end of your story, it's not. It could be just the beginning. And as you just heard from Jenny's story, she turned a situation of hopelessness and fear and powerlessness into the complete opposite: power and adventure and fun and excitement and so much motivation for people like you and I to take from her. And so your pain isn't pointless, and it might not make sense to you right now, but it may be shaping something inside of you, and the world is going to need whatever that is one day. So keep going. If this episode spoke to you, please share it with someone who might need to hear this message, and let's all turn our pain into power. Stay tuned for the episodes to come, and thank you so much for being here. Bye for now.
Thanks for having me.